But I think it is a good idea, whoever you're working with, whether it's a coworker or an employee or a client, to do that regular check-in and ask them, what are the things that I could be doing differently to really make this a great experience for you, so that you'll say, this is why I'm in business. I'm motivated to work with this person every day.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Business of Freelancing podcast, where we help you get better clients, make more money, and live a happier and a healthier life freelancing. I'm your host, Brennan Dunn, and I am just recovering after a very nice and very needed Thanksgiving break. So back to work. I'm actually just now happy to say that I'm finalizing the arrangements for the Double Your Freelancing Conference Europe, which is going to be late June. That's all I can really announce publicly at the moment, but it's going to be incredible. The venue, I can assure you, it's like nothing you've ever seen or been to before. So if you are in Europe or you can get to Europe this summer, I'd strongly encourage you to keep that on your radar. And if you're not on my list yet, that's the best way to find out about the conference when it goes live and everything else. The best place to go would be to doubleyourfreelancing.com and opt in there. So today I have, speaking of Double Your Freelancing Conference, today I have Liston Witherell with me. And Liston was going to speak at the conference in Norfolk this September, but unfortunately he got sick literally a day or two before the conference and couldn't make it. I wanted to bring him on the podcast to talk about getting into the heads or the minds of your clients. One of the really recurring themes that I like to focus on is how critical it is to understand the mindset, you know, the worldview of the kind of people you work for. What do they value? What needs do they have? What problems do they have? How do they express those problems and so on? Because it's only until you're able to do that that you can really distance yourself from being just a commoditized hammer swinger and instead position yourself as an expert consultant who can take a problem that a business has and reliably solve it. So Liston and I sat down to discuss really just how can we learn more about our clients? What processes can we use to really dig into the minds of our clients and really what the benefit of it all is? So without any further hesitation or ado, here is Liston. Okay, everyone, I want to introduce you to my friend Liston Witherell. And Liston, you're going to be at Double Your Freelancing Conference, aren't you? You're going to be a speaker.
I am going to be, and I'm really, really excited to be there. I can't wait.
I'm excited to finally meet you. And actually, it's funny, like, I think half the speakers I've never met in person. So it'll be, you know, yes, I'm sure you'll be presenting an amazing, presentation, and we're going to learn a lot from all the speakers, but I'm just excited to see everyone. Meet everyone.
Yeah, but same here. I was lucky enough to meet Kai in Eugene recently, and I'll be meeting up with Philip because we happen to live about 45 minutes from each other. But other than that, I haven't met anybody.
Yeah, he's north of San Francisco, right?
Yep.
A little north. Uh-huh. Cool. Very cool. Awesome. Well, anyway, welcome to the Business of Freelancing. And today we're going to be talking about getting into the head of your clients, right?
That's right.
So why don't we, before we dive into the meat and potatoes, let's quickly kind of recap. So this is actually, as I was telling you before the recording, it's very good timing because the last two interviews were with Sean D'Souza, where we talked about the importance of really understanding your clients and having that kind of target profile for somebody that you're going to sell to. But we didn't really dive into how to go about learning about who your clients are, what they need, what they value, and so on. And hopefully we can get into that today. So before we go any further, why don't we quick kind of 30-second bio of who you are and what you do?
So my name's Liston Witherell. My company is called Good Funnel at goodfunnel.co. And what I'm focused on is copywriting and three things in particular. Customer research, so really getting to know customers and clients, what they care about, what drives them to buy, what drives them to refer, writing landing pages and designing landing pages, and then putting together email sequences. So the business is very focused and much more productized than it was before. Thank you, Brennan. You know, I'm focused essentially on getting people to sell more stuff online or get more leads online.
Okay. So as a copywriter, it's kind of crucial for you to understand who you're writing to. And presumably you use the same talent that you use when consulting in your own marketing, in your own sales and marketing. What happened, I guess, to make it so you could get to the point where you actually understood who your clients are, what they need, and so on, that you could actually effectively put together a landing page or a sales page that spoke to them and them alone. Tell me a bit about that kind of backstory about how kind of what we're going to be talking about today came about.
Yeah. So, of course, like every good consultant and entrepreneur out there, a big part of my story is trial and error. But you go in with a hypothesis. And for me, I thought, you know, I really want to be around tech businesses. That's where I find myself spending my own personal time reading about what's going on and, you know, focusing on technology trends and trying the newest software. I'm an early adopter in every sense of that term. And so, you know, I thought, okay, here's a group of people and businesses that really need some help in order to sell more online. And particularly if you're a small startup, you really don't have the time it takes to do the rigor of the research and writing copy and testing it and all of that. So that was my original hypothesis. And what I did was kind of a combination of getting lucky and great intention and reaching out to friends, family, and anybody else who would listen to me in the early days. And what I did was offered my services in as a packaged as possible way that I could to people. And then I just observed their response. And I think one of the most important things that I did early on that anybody listening to this podcast should take away from this interview is that I asked anytime I won or lost a project. Now, I think that it's really common when you lose a project to ask the person, why did you choose someone else? Another great way to ask that is, what will you do instead if you're not going to hire me, and especially if you're not going to hire someone else? So you get a sense of what those objections are. But also when I won projects, I asked people why they chose me. And surprisingly, in the early days, it was because I was the most responsive. They just liked doing business with me, right? They felt special. They felt like I paid attention to their needs. And that allowed me to win a lot of projects against much more experienced people in the earliest days. As the business has evolved a little bit, I kind of tested the idea of going up market, maybe trying some content marketing. And by going out and interviewing people who fit that different customer profile. So my customer profile really is a smaller business, say 10 or less people. They're doing around, well, let's say 10 to 20 people. They're doing around $3-4 million a year. And they've hired someone doing outsourced marketing before, some sort of outsourced marketing. And ideally, they're spending money on ads. I'm not having to explain to them, what am I good at? What is it like to spend money on this thing? They already have a sense of that. And so I'm not having to educate them from scratch. But as I tried to go up market a little bit and I tested that, what I realized was I was starting to get into an area of business that I didn't really want to participate in, having my contracts vetted by a legal department of two or three people. All these kinds of things that kind of change the shape of the way I want to do business and my overall sales pitch, right? Do I want a 4-week sales cycle or do I want a 16-week plus sales cycle? So those are the kinds of things I did early and have continued to test along the way to see, does this match my client profile? And really I'm asking two questions. One is, who is willing to pay for something I'm offering at a price that I want to deliver at? And then the other question is, do I actually want to do business with them? And I think you have to continue to ask those two questions. You mentioned Sean D'Souza, and I love his book. Another person whose book I really love is Michael Port, because he really talks about doing business with clients who energize you. And that's been a big driver for me in the way I've developed my business. And I think we all need to be conscious of that.
Yeah, you know, when I had my agency, we always kind of rated clients as either a negative one, a zero, or a plus one. And, you know, my goal was, obviously, kind of the more immediate goal was always to bring in the work so we get paid and I can pay the bills. But the higher goal was always to move the company in the right direction. And it's funny because we had those same two, well, I mean, it's not unique to you or I, it's a universal constant. But, you know, with you want to have clients who not only you can provide value to, which you put as who will pay for your work, basically, are these people that I can actually deliver something of value to them that they're willing to pay for it. But on top of that, you also want something that, or a kind of client that fits the kind of company you want to build. And for me, it was, you know, I didn't want to work with startups because startups were really hard to sell on. You know, my favorite sales tactic is, this is what you're doing now, let me multiply that. But if a startup's starting at zero, you can't, you know, anything multiplied by zero is zero. So that was always tricky. And I sympathize fully with you with the bigger companies when they have procurement departments and, you know, they have separate departments that handle billing. And then the legal department needs to vet everything. And the sales cycle is usually committee driven. And yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that I too wanted to avoid. I mean, to be honest, some people are great at that. They love those kind of projects. They love the idea of working with the Fortune 500. But I think you and I are kind of on the same page with these smaller companies are a little more more straightforward to work with. But I want to ask you one thing, and that is, well, two things really. First off, how did you deliver and phrase your questions? And the reason I want to ask that is there's a lot of parallels, I think, between selling a service and selling a product. And, you know, I have a few products, one of them being PlanScope, which is my SaaS. And in order to cancel, you need to say why you're canceling, right? You go to the cancellation page and there's a form. The form is preceded by a dropdown that kind of helps kind of at a high level segment out people like, you know, they're canceling due to price, they're canceling due to issues with the product, they're canceling due to competitors, whatever that might be. And then I give them the opportunity to fill in exactly why. What I'd like to hear from your experiences would be, you know, I tried to follow up with people days after they canceled PlanScope and realized that hardly anyone would actually tell me why, because at that point they'd kind of written me off, right? You know, when they're going to cancel, when they're going to stop paying, they're kind of at that high water point of emotional engagement with you, right? So, you know, putting it there was really helpful. But on top of that, I also, for any of my paid stuff, like, you know, my courses, I always ask immediate autoresponder, reply and tell me what, you know, why you bought. Because I want to, you know, that all helps me understand what on the marketing site was working, what are really people focusing on, and ultimately what's selling the product. So it sounds like what you're doing, and again, I want to hear tactically exactly what you do, but it sounds like what you're doing is you have some sort of thing that once a client says, all right, you know, let's work together, you immediately incorporate some sort of survey, whether it be like a, you know, an actual formal survey or probably just more like a question you ask them over the phone. But what does that look like in practice? Like, what do you actually say?
Yeah. So if it comes after a win, I always just ask, hey, you know, I'm super curious. Can you tell me what was it about me that made you think that I was the right choice for this project? And so I say, I think two important things there. What was it about me and my business and that made you choose me for this project? And so I find that I get really specific feedback. And then I type it into not only my CRM that's attached to that client so I can go back and refer to it at any time, but I type it into a Google Doc that's a list of all of the answers that I've ever received. Now, when you lose a project, it's a little trickier. And so first I'll tell you what I do for my business, and I'll tell you what I do for clients. When I lose a project, I'm a big proponent of putting people in a position to help you. And what I mean by that is if I lose, I'll go to them and usually over the phone, but sometimes over email, because people may not want to talk to you after they've, you know, kind of dissed you and said, sorry, we're not interested. This is a polite breakup. So over email, I'll say, hey, you know, one thing that really helps me build my business is to understand why I'm winning and losing projects. Can you give me some feedback about why you chose someone else, A, and what I could do differently next time to win your business? So what I'm doing there is I'm really trying to get them to tell me sort of their decision process. Like, you know, this criteria was really important to me, and so I chose someone else, or you were just too expensive, which I think the longer you're in business, you'll hear that more, depending on how well you qualify your projects.
And it's usually also not always a true or an accurate response, right? Like I found that yes. A lot of people who say you're too expensive, that to me, that means there's a bug in me delivering the value of what some people legitimately who can't afford it, that's one thing, right? But yeah, that's always a smell to me.
I think partially, you know, and like I said earlier, and I think you've said this before too, if you're doing business with people who've spent money on at least a product or service that's an analog to yours, you get a sense that they're willing to invest. Sometimes people aren't willing to invest. But the second part of that ask of saying, you know, what can I do to win your business next time is really to prime them, to let them know, I plan on staying in touch with you and I'm going to do better next time you have a project and I still want to win your business. And that allows you to kind of build a bridge between here losing this project and maybe working for them in the future, which I've done successfully before as well. So asking those questions has multiple purposes.
Do you do anything in terms of like, so say you ask them that kind of parting question of where you're dropping that hint of you want to kind of stay in touch and work with them in the future. Do you then convert that to any sort of follow-up plan where you actually do try to sell them in the future, or do you just expect, or do you just hope that they kind of come back to you?
No, got to be a little more proactive than that. No, I of course ask them if I can add them to my newsletter. So that's a nice kind of, you know, low touch, no additional effort way of staying in contact with them. But I also say, hey, I estimated that this project would take about 2 months. What do you think about me checking in with you in 2 months from today to see how it went? And 100% of the time they will say, yeah, absolutely. Right. And sometimes what I found is when I check in with them, and here's another tip. I use this thing called followupthen.com, which I believe is free if you use it not very much. I use it all the time, but I just put in my BCC line to the person 2 months at followupthen.com, and it pops the email right back up into my inbox without ever having to leave my email. And so I don't have to tweak my CRM or whatever. So there's a nice little tip.
Those tools are so great. I use a tool called Boomerang, which kind of does same thing, but they're so useful because I think we all get to the point. I mean, a lot of us, I think what happens is we're like, oh yeah, I'll remember to contact Bob in 2 months, but then we forget to contact Bob. If you want the easy, you know, the thing that I actually, you know, one of my early projects with my agency was we built a tool for real estate agents where they were manually going in and kind of doing this, but through their calendars. So they would just go in and say 2 months out, follow up with X or something, right? And then I guess at that date, they'd search their inbox for, you know, X's contact info or search their CRM for that. But I mean, something like that is so useful. And you can do other things like, I think, is it Sanebox, I think, is a tool that will make it so if this is an email that is expecting a reply and they don't reply within a certain time period, then to automatically kind of like bring it back to your inbox or something.
Oh, yeah. You can do that with follow up then as well.
Okay.
There's, as you know, a million ways to skin the cat on that one. But just do something for that thing to automatically come back and say, you know, hey, you said you'd check up with this person. So that's my follow-up method. But you know, when I'm working with clients, what I'll ask is something really simple. Just, can you take me back to the time before you bought, if I'm talking to someone who actually bought from them, take me back to the time before you bought and think about all the problems you were having that you were trying to solve when you bought this. Now, why did you choose it? And if you kind of ask these mindset questions, you know, tell me how you felt. What did it feel like to have this problem solved? All those kinds of questions really allow you to, I think in a really easy way, get into the minds of people. And what I find is when I ask people for interviews and I really convey to them how valuable it's going to be either to my business or to the business I'm interviewing for, they're absolutely willing to help. Everybody wants to feel helpful. They want to feel like their opinion matters. And so if you can convey that in the process of asking them, they will want to help you.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it's really important, like you were saying, to really get the full picture. I think so many of us focus on like what actually convinced you in my proposal to hire me. But I think the more you can go back in time and say what actually got you to, you know, come up with this project and you know, and so on. That's all really useful data also.
Well, as you know, if you're doing your sales process right, then there's nothing new in the proposal. You've talked about it all already and they've
you're just rehashing everything.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So the next kind of the next thing that I want to talk about is what do you do with this information once you have it? So how do you act on it? Like it's one thing to have info. I'm guilty of this myself. I have all this data that I've collected, both through analytics or, you know, Mixpanel or even just database logs. And I'm guilty of having all this useful data, not actually acting on it to the full extent that it could be useful. So some of the things I've done, and I'm sure this is kind of similar to probably what you're going to talk about, is there's nothing that sells better than basically throwing somebody's words back at them. You know, so if a lot of people are saying that this is the problem that I had, and this is why I ended up hiring you, you know, incorporating that exact wording into your marketing tends to be pretty useful. So what do you do in terms of you have all this data, you have all this, these responses that are usually in the form of probably email replies or just whatever. What do you do with them?
So I do several things. The first is the obvious one, like you said, which is I'll update my copy around the information I'm getting back. And really, I'm trying to classify two different types of information. One is, what is it like to do business with me? And two, what are the results you're expecting from the services that I provide, right? So on the first one, I continue to build my business and do the things that make for a really good experience for people. So they say they love my communication. They like it when I'm really responsive. They like, you know, some of the articles that I write and that I share them. They like that I do webinars and those are free. So that gives me feedback around some of kind of the marketing experiments and different things I'm trying, as well as the reasons why I'm actually winning business. On the other side, you know, the reasons people are buying, what are the results they're after? So on my website now, I can't even quote it verbatim, but it says something like, you know, get more leads and conversions, because that's what everybody wants. When I ask them, why are you coming to me? Why is now the right time to hire a copywriter, which is a great qualifying question for people. Why is now the right time to hire X, whoever you are? Often what they tell me is, we need more conversions. We're up against a wall. We don't know what else to do. And we need someone who really understands, you know, the ability to write and to resonate with the people who want to do business with us, our particular audience. That's one thing I do with it, is give those words right back in the copy. And of course, testimonials are great too. The other thing I do, and I think is a bigger shift, is actually develop my business around the feedback I'm getting for the primary value that I provide for people. So what I hear often is that the things that I do that people really love is the customer research. They say, I got the most value and I learned so much about not only my customer, but I learned so much about my business and how my business should look through that, because you came in and objectively identified some data points, right? So I hear that over and over again. And I thought, well, why don't I just make that its own product, basically, right? So hire me to do customer research for you. So not only have I evolved the marketing and the copy that I use, but I've evolved the product itself.
Yeah, I mean, it's helped you understand more about kind of where you're able to best. I mean, it's not that you don't provide value in the copywriting and everything else you do to your clients, but it seems like you provide unique value, or, you know, value that isn't expected, I guess, you know, at the time of selling them, you know, that they got from you. So, which is funny because, I mean, it's you're basically now developing, from what I can tell, developing a productized service that is not something that you just yanked out of the air. It's not something that you necessarily sat down one day and objectively thought, what is something I could do? You're just responding to what people have told you.
That's absolutely correct. And it also leads very naturally into the other services that I offer. So, yeah, that's exactly right. Pay your dues and you'll learn a little bit.
What do you think? I mean, outside of having, you know, some sort of questionnaire for both winning a project and losing a project, what are some other things that you would advise kind of the typical freelance consultant to do to better understand who their clients are? I mean, what can they do? Can they do things during the project that help kind of accumulate data points, for lack of a better way of putting it? Or, you know, what are some things you would recommend that they could do
in order to learn more about their clients?
Well, both in order to learn more about their clients, to collect the data, but also to use that data. So, I mean, one of the things that I've done that's worked well for me is I get a lot of raw data that's, you know, that's just kind of text, right? I can't run a script to kind of figure out easily, at least, you know, what are some like major themes or whatever. So I've recently spent a lot of time and even some money trying to normalize a lot of the data I have. So, you know, I have this email course where the number one, you know, the first worksheet that I send people, one of the questions is, what are you hoping to get out of this course? Like, what do you want to change as a result of going through this course? And I have something like 11,000 submissions to that. So, you know, these are all things that they're all really useful, but I'm at the point now where I'm trying to find, you know, I'm working with, actually, I found somebody who's now going through these records and trying to normalize them into a, you know, what I have her doing is she's got a spreadsheet, a Google Doc with different kind of core themes that are keep coming up. And then she's tallying up like a score for each theme. So, you know, once she's through, which will probably be a while, I should have something like, here are the main kind of subjects that people have talked about. And from there, I could drill down and get to specific, you know, emails that have the actual wording. So if one thing is, let's say that the results of this help me drive the curriculum of the V2 of this course, I'm then going to describe each part, each module, each lesson using the language that actually people have put into the worksheet submission, if that makes sense. So, you know, normalization, I think, now for most freelancers, when you're talking about having a dozen or a few dozen clients, this isn't really a need.
No, as much. No, your email course scales much better than client.
But work. That being said, I still think it's important to, you have raw data, but it's important to reflect on that data and to attempt, and this is what you were saying in terms of how you developed this new service of yours, attempt to normalize themes, you know, to come up with common traits that are maybe not universal, maybe not a part of every data point you have, but at least are a majority, are recurring. You know, I see a lot of people who they struggle to come up with positioning or how they position themselves, or they struggle to come up with a product or whatever it might be. And it seems like the ones who are struggling are the ones who are trying to think of things in their own little laboratory instead of actually just responding to data, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's tricky because I think that also a lot of people end up just doing client work for any client that comes along. And so if they're looking only for outside data points, right? People to tell them what it is that's so awesome about them and their business or what they could do differently, then they're kind of ignoring, you know, where would I really truly be happy if I was working with the clients that I want? So it's a little tricky, but a couple things I would build into your process whenever you're doing client work. One is some natural milestones and check-ins, and I would set up expectations for that early on so that people know. You know, for me, I'll say, hey, you know, when I finish my research, what I want to do is write up a little brief around what I've done so far and give you a sense of exactly where this project is going so that before you get the copy, you already know essentially what you're going to get, right? How do you feel about that? And everybody goes, that sounds amazing. Yes, do that. And so when I check in with them, I not only show them what I've done so far, but I also ask them, how am I doing? How's the project going? Is there anything I could be doing differently? And that kind of helps me course correct a little bit. And then I think really importantly at the end, always ask for a testimonial, and people's willingness to give you a testimonial or not right away will tell you a lot about how the engagement went. See what they say in the testimonial. And also, I think it's important to ask for referrals. And another question I ask is, if you were to refer me, what would you say? And the reason I ask that is because, you know, when someone's having a conversation with a friend or colleague, they're not going to go on and on about you for 5 minutes. They're going to say something in, 30 seconds, and you should really talk to this guy, right? So whatever those things are that they say that are really top of mind are the things that, for whatever reason, you established in their mind about doing business with you and what you're really good at and where you've provided a lot of value to them. And I found that to be really helpful. And of course, the question, if you have an email drip campaign, the obvious one is, what's the greatest challenge in your business today? Assuming you're attracting the right people to that email list, you're going to get a lot of great feedback there too.
It's a great point about the point about the referrals, because, and this is the reason I don't like focus groups or traditional attempts at customer research, is that when you ask somebody point blank about, what was it like working with me, or can you give me a testimonial? Oftentimes they're going to fit that into, first off, they don't want to hurt your feelings in any way. So they might be intentionally vague about certain things, right? But they're going to try to fit that oftentimes into a what a testimonial should look like. And that's why the best is thing, if you can, one of my tactics early on for when I was starting my SaaS, for instance, was I would look at message boards that kind of that ideal customer lurked at and just kind of put my ear to the ground and listen to what they were saying. And that worked so well in just trying to understand kind of, so something like that, which is like, what would you say if your friend, if your peer, if you referred me to them and then they asked you before they called me, can you tell me a bit about Liston? Can you tell me a bit about what it was like working with them? What would you say there? I mean, that is so much better, I think, so much more actionable, because you want something actionable, right? Like, you want that feedback to be something that you can either double down on, or if a part of it is negative, then you want to course correct. So yeah, I think that's a really good point you just made. So you were talking about kind of having these milestone checkup points, right? Where you're able to kind of gauge the health of the project, I guess, for lack of a better way of putting it. One of the things we used to do was we would have, because a lot of our projects were multi-month, they would go 4 months, 6 months. They were long. And if all of your discussions are around the details of the project right now, so, what is this page going to look like? How should it function? And so on. It's hard to, if you don't set aside time for kind of the higher level relationship discussions, right? It could end up not working out very well, because there could be a lot of kind of negatives that are floating around that aren't being addressed. And, there's really, if there's no room for them to be addressed, they could eventually kind of spill over and explode. But one of the things we did was we would do monthly retrospectives, where we would get our client, along with those involved on the project, to spend about an hour usually. And we would have, if they were in our office, it would be in our conference room with a whiteboard. If not, it would be something digital, I forgot the tool we used, but it was basically like a digital whiteboard type thing. And we would have three columns, which were positive, neutral, and negative. And everyone, the client, myself as the owner of the company, the team involved working on it, could throw up any thoughts that they had about any of these, right? So a plus could be, I like how responsive you, the client, are in reviewing the work that we send over to you. Or a neutral could be like the client saying, I like the design. It's not anything I'm raving about, and it's not something I'm upset with, but it's okay. And then negatives would be, you know, obviously, but, you know, we're spending a lot of money. I don't really see the project coming together. You know, the things that usually end up being those 11th hour, we need to talk discussions. And by doing this every month, you know, we would have this exercise where we would get together with the explicit intention to talk about the relationship as a whole. And, you know, we would throw up these ideas. People could then upvote them, you know, plus one on this one, plus one on this one, plus one. And we could kind of weigh what are the really the big themes. And then at the end of that meeting, anything negative, we would require that some action item came out of it. So whether it be a negative on the client's part, meaning the client's not reviewing our work, they're keeping their head in the sand, they're not giving us our requirements when we need them, or it's something on our end, we would come away and we would all agree, everyone involved, to fix those negatives before we meet again next month. And that was so useful in terms of just getting, venting a lot of things before they become that problem where me as the owner of the company gets an email, gets a phone call from a client saying, hey, Brennan, we need to talk. And I did not want to have those phone calls. So this is a great way to keep them from happening.
Yeah, I love that. You know, I heard Steli Efti, one of the other speakers actually at the Double Your Freelance conference, talk about how he does that with his co-founders. And I think anytime you're working with a group of people where you're moving fast and you're all working towards a common goal, and sometimes personal opinions get pushed out to the side away from this one goal, I think that's a recipe where some resentment can build. My projects aren't exactly like that because usually it's just me working with one or two people. But I think it is a good idea, whoever you're working with, whether it's a coworker or an employee or a client, to do that regular check-in and ask them, what are the things that I could be doing differently to really make this a great experience for you, so that you'll say, this is why I'm in business. I'm motivated to work with this person every day.
Yeah. And we did these internally too, without our clients, just at a company level where people could complain about me. I could, you know, you know, whatever.
Sure. That never happened.
And that's, oh yeah, of course not. But that was really helpful too. But I think even if you're working solo, it's important to take time away where you're actually thinking about, you could do the same thing. Like, what's good about the business? What's meh? And then what sucks? And anything that sucks, come up with ways to fix it.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, I do that. I have a little dialogue with myself and my whiteboard about once a month.
Yeah, and I think it's important. Like, you know, if you wanted to get done, schedule it. So I think one big takeaway that somebody could do after listening is go into their calendar, set something up for next week, and have it be recurring, and make that be your kind of internal time where you're going to actually spend an hour to reflect on your business and what's positive and what's negative.
Yeah. And, you know, from the perspective of working with a client, I'd say if it's too hard for people to put something on the calendar and commit to that, certainly anytime you get the sense that this project may not be going right, or I'm not really clicking with this person anymore, or something happened, there's something there. That should be your indication that now is the time to talk to them and be proactive about it. Don't let it go on, because you're definitely going to lose the client and the project's going to be a disaster. So definitely be proactive about it. And people really respect that. You know, if you go to them and say, hey, I want to make sure I'm doing the best possible job for you. You paid good money for me to be engaged with you, and I want to deliver the value that you're seeking. Can we talk about that? They'll actually really appreciate it. So don't be afraid.
Yep. So listen, thank you again for coming on. And I can't wait to finally meet you. Almost a month from now, month and change.
Wow.
At the conference. But for those listening, where can people find, I mean, obviously, if they want to hang out with you and have a drink, they can come to the conference. But, you know, alternatively, what are some other ways that people can find out more about
you? Well, first and foremost, if you see me at the conference, I prefer bourbon.
You will be in the South, so we have plenty of bourbon.
I know it'll have less of a journey than it takes to get to California. Exactly. But yeah, if you want to get a hold of me, please email me at liston@goodfunnel.co. You can always just visit my website, which is goodfunnel.co. And I have 10 questions that every freelancer should be asking their clients to better know them. It's a worksheet on my website, and you can get that at goodfunnel.co/DYF.
Awesome. Well, Liston, thank you again. And we'll talk and see each other soon.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Brennan.
I hope you enjoyed my interview with Liston. And as always, I would love and appreciate any and all reviews or ratings you can put on iTunes. You know, my goal is to get the podcast in the earbuds of more freelancers out there. And the best way to do that and the best way to promote it within iTunes is through reviews. So thank you again if you've already done that. I know a lot of you have, but if you haven't yet, please head over to iTunes, type in The Business of Freelancing, or type in Brennan Dunn and leave a review if you haven't yet. And again, I will keep you up to date about the proceedings for both the European conference and the next American conference. I also have a lot of new things on the docket for 2016. Notwithstanding my biggest project, which is running Double Your Freelancing Clients, which is, again, it's closed now, but we had a lot of people join, and the motivation level's through the roof. But I'm going to be, you know, through this podcast and also through my newsletter, I'll be sharing a lot of what I'm doing to make it so 2016 will not only be the best year for Double Your Freelancing as a brand, but also for you and really new people, other people who are kind of in this routine of slogging through client project after client project and not really having a mastery of the business behind their business. Again, that's my goal with this podcast and everything, is to help people really level up the way that they conduct their business and really ultimately allow them to have both the lifestyle, the income, the client caliber, and everything else that they want to have, the reason that they went into business for themselves in the first place. All right, so we'll see you back next week for another exciting episode of The Business of Freelancing.